welcome to BroTalk, and I'm really pleased to reach across Atlanta and introduce Kevin, who will be today's guest. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, very well, Kevin. Hey, Kevin, for the listeners, could you tell me your full name and whereabouts you are in America?
Sure. My name is Kevin Koenig. I'm a journalist. I'm also known on Instagram as the Yacht Fella. And I live in Greenwich, Connecticut, which is about 45 minutes north of New York City.
So let's dive straight into it. Kevin, you said you're a journalist. Was that some specifically chosen career path for you, or is it something that you fell into?
I think I was always destined — is too strong a word, but we'll use it for lack of a better word — destined to be a writer. I grew up in a literary household. My father was a lawyer and an art history major, and my mother was a high school English teacher, ran an English department at a very good public school where I grew up. And letters were something that we just talked about at the dinner table. And I grew up just always being a very good writer, but it's hard to make a living as a writer, as I found out in my early 20s. So I tripped and landed in investment banking in my early to mid 20s. And I worked at Goldman Sachs for a while and didn't like it. I'd like the paycheck.
Yeah. What was it about Goldman Sachs you didn't like? Given briefly, was it the culture?
It was a square peg, round hole situation. No business being there. People liked me there because they liked to go out and have a beer with me. And I was like fun to be around and hold a conversation. But I guess I was a personality like me.
Okay. So you were there for how long?
At the bank?
Yeah.
I was at the bank for 2 years and 9 months. And then I got laid off the day the stock, or I guess a few days after the stock market crashed in, what was that, 08? It was December 9th, I know, because it was right before Christmas. And there were 16 people on our desk, a credit derivatives desk, and 12 of our computers shut off at the exact same time. And we all thought there was some kind of glitch. And then all of our phones at the exact same time. And we got called up and literally got fired. But I got a really nice severance package, so I was actually really happy. All my coworkers wanted to go out and get beers at 10 a.m. and commiserate. And I was like, forget that. I literally walked out of Goldman Sachs and jumped in the air, clicked my heels like a leprechaun. I'm so happy.
So did that then give you the idea or the passion to return to Jerry, which you said was your heart, but the pay's not great?
Yeah, the pay is tough and the jobs are tough. It's a little bit — I've attained a certain level of success in my career, and I liken it sometimes to almost like being a movie star or something like that. Not that I'm a movie star, but if you want to be a writer, if you say you want to be a writer, you really have to commit and go through some lean, skinny times. And even then, it's not guaranteed that you're going to be successful at it. Like you see all the actors waiting tables in New York and LA, and some of them never make it. A lot of writers never make it. But the reason for that is there are a lot of very good writers in the world. But to be successful, you have to have a combination of things that are a little bit more rare than just writing talent. You need to be able to sell. You need to be able to sell yourself and your ideas to people. Mm-hmm. You're willing to market yourself a lot, get out and work and talk to the right people and find them and just move and shake in a way that I actually find very appealing. And then you have to be very diligent, which is hard because a lot of writers have that creative, that artist's mindset, right? And they realize that as a writer, my job's changed a little bit with all the social media stuff going on. But typically when I'm working for a magazine or a newspaper, I consider my job, besides getting all the facts straight and to write a good story, my job is to make the editor's job easier. That's how you become a popular freelance writer. You're doing all the things that the editor would have to do anyway. And that means following up, making sure your facts are checked, making sure your grammar's right, all this kind of stuff that people sometimes get bored doing. If you do that, you'll be very popular as a freelance journalist, and probably that applies to any other type of work. Make your boss's job easier.
Yeah. Okay. And what's your relationship with the yachting in terms of as a journalist? How did you break into that or connect with that industry?
Yeah. After I was laid off at Goldman Sachs, I was more or less unemployed for a year and a half. I had a quick little cup of coffee at a marketing agency that didn't work out. But I was, like I said, I had pretty good money saved up from working in banking, and I had a good severance. So I didn't really need to work for a little bit. I had some leeway, and I knew for sure I didn't want to go work back a regular office job. It just wasn't for me. And I was kicking around. I was I've always been into fitness. So I was like thinking, I just read Lone Survivor, I think I was like, oh, maybe I'll go try out for Special Forces or something like that. And then I was thinking about, you know, firemen, FDNY. I just wanted to do something active and find a bit of a purpose. And then a shocking turn of events. I applied online. I saw an ad for, the other thing I wanted to do was write. If I could find a way to make money writing, I thought that would be great, because that's what I'd love to do, right?
Yeah.
And I, on my little website called Media Bistro, which is hot with all the hipsters back in the aughts in New York City, had a job for an assistant editor position at Power and Motor Yacht magazine, which I had never heard of.
Okay.
And I applied online, and 2 months went by, and I was sitting on my couch at Tuesday, I'm like 4 p.m., I think, and got a phone call, and it was from this lovely woman, pretty thick Ukrainian accent, and she was trying to tell me that I had applied for a job at Power and Motor Yacht, and I was like, I almost hung up on her. I was like, what are you talking about? This doesn't make any sense. It sounded like a scam or something, and she, thank goodness, convinced me to stay on the line. And it was actually for that job. They read my writing sample and liked it.
Yeah.
I was called in for an interview. I met the man who would end up becoming my first mentor in the industry. And we hit it off completely. It was just like, we had immediate chemistry. We talked for 3 hours, I think, or something like that.
Wow. Okay.
And I walked out and was like, oh, I got the job. And I did not have the job. He sent me a picture of a boat that night, which ended up being a Viking 82, I found out later on, but it asked me for 1,000 words on it by 3 p.m. the next day. I did all the Googling I could, and I should say that we had a boat growing up. I knew a little. We had like 23-foot Sea Ray or something like that. So I wasn't like complete novice going in on the street.
Yeah.
I grew up on boats in the summertime in New Jersey. And I certainly knew not to like bullshit my way through an interview. And so yeah, he sent me a picture of this boat and asked for 1,000 words on it by 3 p.m. the next day. And I did a ton of research and stayed up all night and was laser focused. And I luckily, by a stroke of fate, I knew that the boat was built in New Jersey because it was a Viking. I used to go fishing at the Manasquan Inlet with my father, and Grady Whites would roll by and he'd say, that's a good boat. And then a Viking would come by and he'd say, and that's a really good boat. And so I knew a little bit about them. I knew they were fast and built in New Jersey. So I titled the article Born to Run, and I wove a bunch of Springsteen quotes throughout the article, and I hit 1,000 words on the button and sent it at 9 a.m. the next day, and I got hired.
1,000 words on the button.
15 years ago, worked my way up from associate editor at Power and Motor Yacht to executive editor at Yachting. I was poached about 10 years ago, I guess it is now. Jeez, it's a long time ago. Yeah, 10 years ago. And then 3.5 years ago, I left Yachting, struck out on my own. And that's when my career really hit hyperdrive.
What was the decision for you, Kevin, to go out on your own? Was it a natural decision or was it?
Things at Yachting were clicking for me. I'll say that. It became very clear at a certain point. It was during the pandemic. I think a lot of emotions were heightened. It became clear that it was time for me to move on, which I did.
Right. Are you able to share a bit more, Kevin, regards to your experience? I know you were coming from a journalist angle, but your experience of the yachting industry as a whole, particularly regards to being talking about mental health, crew members, support that's there, the support that's not there from your observation.
I love the yachting industry. I'm a huge proponent of it. I think it's just wonderful, and the life that it has given me has been just exceptional. The amount of adventure, the people I've met, I just think it's absolutely a fantastic place to work. Part of the reason I love it is because it's a little bit like the Wild West. I feel like it's not quite as regulated as other industries.
Yeah.
And it's old school. It's like it's a real relationship business. It's handshake. It's probably not the greatest comparison, but sometimes I liken it to the Mad Men type stuff in the 60s. So you're down in Florida. It's not uncommon to see someone like crack a beer earlier in the day than you might expect. And it's a lot of fun. The flip side of that, I think, for a lot of people is that there's a fair bit of partying and there's like this old school mentality that doesn't really encompass this newer wave of mental health, and particularly for young men or any men. So that's, I feel like it's probably a generational thing. It's an older business. Print mag still strong in yacht. Show me another business where that is. The owners are older and they get trickle down effect. It's just generational. It's not anything, a knock against anyone. It's just this mental health movement. I feel nobody under nobody was talking about it until, I don't know what, 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago, right? And now that became like a big wave and people are understanding how important it is.
With that said, Kevin, obviously I haven't worked directly in the industry, so you've got much more knowledge, inside knowledge than I have. But looking back, like, it's generational, I can appreciate that. Were there things that you observed or experienced that weren't, let's say, correct, that would have likely to affected people's mental health?
On the media side, I can really only speak to the media side in that regard. I know that the crew probably have a totally different perspective, and I've heard stories, but I can't really speak to that firsthand.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do get certain bosses and people in charge who probably are a little vindictive, or it's like any industry. You're not really sure how they got to certain places, and they do, and they really pretty terrible to their underlings. But I don't know that's specific to yachting. I think it's just specific to the human race.
Yeah, sure. But we think, because I've heard reported, or repeat is a better word, that it very much depends on, in terms of the boat, the owner. And the owner, as in every industry, the person at the top or the people at the top generally set the culture. So you could have.
Yeah. Oh, it's a top-down industry, especially boats in particular, the whole industry. It's top-down culture, because say your owner is a billionaire or worth well into the nine figures, and he has a 150-foot boat. He's in charge. The captain's in charge nominally, but the captain's an employee, and the captain is going to reflect who the owner is, usually, because if the owner doesn't vibe with the captain, he's not going to be there very long. And then a good captain will set the tone for the boat all the way down to the deckhands. And most of the captains I met have been really seem like good people. Like I said, I haven't worked a crew on a boat, so I can't really speak to it firsthand. Captains I've met have been awesome. They're usually like very adventurous. And yeah, it's probably a little more hard nosed than most people. What do you want? They're sea captains.
Yeah, I get. So for you, as you said, prior to, probably 6, 7 years ago, we have a huge wave now about mental health and even a stronger message regards to men. And if it is needed, what would you say is the way forward? What would be practical help in terms of getting the right support at the right time? People coming into the yachting industry, I know you didn't work directly on as a crew, but you've got good knowledge around that area that would help support, because it is a different industry compared to most others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a macro sense, stuff like we're doing right now, like getting that awareness out there. Getting awareness out there and letting people know, especially for men. Mental health can be a sticky issue, right? Because nobody wants to look like they're soft or they're not independent or whatever. But the fact of the matter is men suffer from mental health issues at really high rates. I don't have the math off the top of my head, but you look at suicide rates, they're higher for men. You look at addiction rates, higher for men. You look at incarceration rates, homelessness, they're all higher for men. And guys really struggle with this kind of stuff, and they need to be able to talk about it, and they need to know that when and if they need help, they need to know that it's okay to do that. And also, at a more micro sense, they need to know where to go. They need the right followers. They need people around them. They need mentors. But part of the reason I took this podcast is because I'm 42 now, and I'm not quite an elder statesman, but I'm certainly a full-fledged grown-up, and I have no problems talking about the mental health stuff and encouraging younger men to go do it, to go see a psychiatrist if they need to, get on medications if that's where they're directed.
Yeah.
All sorts of anything, from taking better care of your body all the way up. It all starts with taking care of your physical body and then working up the mental health, I think.
In agreement. And for you, Kevin, how do you cope with pressure, stress? Because you've given a highlighted view of your career, but naturally within that, there have been challenges, stressful moments, periods.
Yeah, it took me quite a long time to figure out how to deal with stress better. And it's an ongoing thing for me, as it should be for everybody. I dealt with depression for a large period of my life. I've had it in check really since I started working for myself and got out from underneath some of the other pressures I was facing.
Yeah.
But in periods of high stress, if it's day after day and you're down, or you can't get out of bed, or if you're drinking when you shouldn't be drinking, or if you're having you know, these intrusive thoughts or whatever. The first thing you need to do, I think, what I need to do is address my sleep. It starts with rest. And I need to make sure I'm getting proper exercise. I do jujitsu and I lift weights and I do that nearly every day just to keep my body at an even keel. I feel so much better when I exercise. Rest is key. Proper hydration is key. Not putting things in your body. I mean, this is high school level stuff, but not putting things in your body that are going to make you sad the next day. Well, when you come down, there's yachting is a party industry. So there's booze everywhere. And I don't know what else, but I'm sure there's lots of other stuff. you got to keep an eye out for it and make sure that you're making bodily healthy choices for yourself. And then you can get into your mental regimen. And a lot of that for me, one of the smartest things and most useful things I was ever told was that you need to, your interior monologue needs to be gentle. You need to speak to yourself the way that you would speak to someone you love that you're in charge of taking care of. I'm very competitive. I'm type A. I'm like, can be very self-critical. And a psychiatrist point that out. I can't remember where I picked it up. But these days, if I start getting down on myself in my head, I really completely block it out and just start being my own hype man, hyping myself up.
Yeah.
That works wonders. If you don't let yourself talk badly about yourself, it's incredible what can happen to your psyche. It happens pretty quick. I got deeply into stoicism, the philosophy, along with that meditation.
Yeah.
I've written about stoicism and mental health actually at length for Esquire magazine. And so I found this belief pattern that really helped me be more present and more, how should I say this? More present and just a little bit more Spartan the way that I deal with my day to day. I don't party or anything like that. I'm really into physical fitness. And you see that change. I used to party a lot. I used to be out there and I stopped that. And that helped with my mental health as well.
And Kevin, thank you for your openness and honesty. How much is your wife a support for you in regards to your general well-being? And do you have close friends you speak to?
My wife is wonderful. She's fully supportive. She knows that, especially with my history, she knows that if I start to go off the rails a little bit, that I need to do what I need to do to get myself on track. So if that means that she needs to take care of the kids a little bit more, or you know, if I need a little bit extra sleep, if I need to get to the gym, if whatever, she's there for me. And she'll listen to me as well if I have issues. And I'm really blessed to have a really good tight circle of friends. I've known for basically my whole life. On Saturday, I was at my high school reunion and I was hanging out with my five best friends that I grew up with who've been incredible. I talk to those guys every day. And yeah. I talk to my friends from college, from university every day as well on G-chat, on chats and stuff like that. But we're all very tight. It's really important to have that close circle of people you can go to when the chips are down who aren't going to judge you. And typically I find that even that goes even farther back. As my star has risen in the past, really the past year, my career in particular has really skyrocketed. And the people that I've found seem to be the most genuinely happy for me outside of maybe even within my immediate family. My friends from growing up are like, let's say, I feel like a rapper or something sometimes. They're all like, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, like, yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And like you touched on, because I know the children will be home from school soon. You mentioned earlier when you was left Goldman Sachs and about purpose. And how much do you think purpose, finding your purpose or being your purpose, affects your mental health positively or negatively?
Oh, purpose is huge. You got to find something that you care about in life. If you don't find something that you can really care about and be working towards, you're going to fall into nihilistic patterns. I'm a philosophy guy, so I can talk about this on a level that might not be everybody's cup of tea, but you need to create purpose for yourself, even if it seems like you're in this kind of rut where nothing matters and the world is pointless and you're not taking care of yourself because what the fuck? Who cares? World's going to end anyway. Yeah. You're going to die. You need to be, as a stoicism helped me a lot with this, you need to be very disciplined about just picking anything and applying meaning to that. You need to imagine Sisyphus happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can move. And Sisyphus, of course, is forever rolling the boulder up the mountain. And then the gods cursed him, so it would have to go back down. And he would have to get in and push it back up. And Albert Camus, the French existentialist philosopher, said that you need to imagine Sisyphus happy. You need to, even with the struggle, even when it seems pointless, you need to think of him being happy doing the task at hand. And that's a little bit of an esoteric concept, but it really does work for me, at least.
Actually, Kevin, stoicism is really grounded in discipline. And probably a conversation for another time, but a lot of men probably don't have been brought up with discipline as much as it did back in our day or our parents' day. When you're feeling rock bottom or you're not feeling great about yourself or the world around you, how achievable is it someone to go from that plate to that? And I understood what you said was like, you need to create purpose for yourself or find it within you. But is it easier said than done? Especially if you haven't got the support network around, or you don't feel you have, or you don't reach out to somebody.
It's not easy. That's why depression is, and substance abuse and all these other things are so common. It's hard to find something you care about. It's hard to make yourself keep caring about it. And it's hard to actually do something about it. But it's doable. It's just hard. It's nothing worth it in life is easy. Finding purpose is a ongoing path that you need to really commit to and figure out how that goes. And for me, that's my family. That's my career. That's being a good husband. That's also, I'm very committed to my jujitsu. So those are things that really drive me and keep me on a straight path.
And as you said,
I'm not a total goody two shoes, but it helps. Also saying it's been a pat.
For similar reasons, obviously it's huge. It's huge for me. It's what I speak about a lot of the time, whether it's a teenager or adults in our age bracket. You mentioned about when you was at Goldman Sachs and your heart wasn't there, but it was good money.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, they've had a great career, but they're not enjoying it. For others, they've got into it and it's more the money, the attraction, the lifestyle it provides, but it doesn't necessarily have their heart. So they're struggling, like, how do I find my purpose so I can go after it? Because I don't want to give up this lifestyle that it brings. And if I go for my purpose, I may lose the ability to provide for my family. And it's a situation that many men find themselves with.
That's a tough one. You may need to find your purpose outside of your vocation. You may need to have a vocation. You may need a hobby. You may need a charity. You may need to just double down on your focus and on your time spent with your family. I'm extremely blessed. I'm really fucking lucky that I love my job, and I know that's the case for everybody. If you don't like a job, you need to, I'd love to say, like, oh, just quit and go become a yacht writer, influencer, or whatever. But that's just, I got really lucky, honestly. It's not the case for everybody. And you just need to be cognizant of the fact that you are not your work, and there's always something you can do better outside of work, or you can find a new job. That's the other side of it. Maybe it's a different boat, or maybe it's a different career, or maybe it's a different career within the marine industry. You hear about that, people becoming chefs, or people becoming, there's a guy in Dubai that owns a 136 footer right now, and he used to be crew, and he figured out, I think, how sound system worked on boats and ended up creating a company out of that and selling sound systems. And now he went from a deckhand to a yacht owner, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. And you said something very significant about you're not your work. You're not what you do. Yet I would say for many of us men, we do identify strongly with what I do, because that's the script that we're given. It's almost not what your name is. What do you do? Yeah. It's almost this first or second question, any form of introduction. And depends on what we do, we can either feel really good about it or we can shy away from it. Please don't ask me that question. I understand what you're saying about finding your purpose in your hobby or charities. I think it's a longer process with men being identified with what they do. And of it, a lot of men do gravitate to, right, initially, this is the career I want to do because it makes me look good or the money's good. It's a strong attachment.
Yeah, first of all, that's a shitty question to ask. I try to shy away from it when people ask me what I do straight off the bat. Like, I judge a little bit. Like, there's so many things you can ask somebody about. Then, the second question out of somebody's mouth is, what do you do for work?
Yeah.
Find somebody else to talk to, I'll tell you that much. But it's the unfortunate, but maybe just the reality of being a man is that, at least for a very long time, and maybe it's changed in the past few decades, but traditionally, a man was only as good as what he could provide. That's the traditional values. And that's part of the reason that, men struggle so much, especially in the modern world where maybe their jobs are becoming less and less valuable.
Yeah.
They can't, maybe they're not the top earner in their household, which is totally fine. That's hard for a lot of guys. Or maybe that driving a fancy car in America, you can't even afford a house or even rent on an apartment these days. It's a tough gig to be a dude these days.
Yeah.
Which is why talking about mental health and being open about it is really important, because it's everybody's more or less in the same boat, no pun intended. It's not easy out there unless you inherited $1 billion or something, or a lot of money. It doesn't have to be a billion. Inherited a lot of money. It's tough, man. It really is. And not everybody is fortunate enough to make it financially or success, however you want to define success. People got to be there for each other and realize that there's other values outside of having a Porsche in your driveway.
Yes, most certainly, Gray, especially from speaking to people like you, the profession I'm working as a therapist. Despite lots of things we've improved with the main image identity and women as well, there still seems to be that underlying expectation for men to provide financially. And that's how they're assessed. And a lot of the pressure men face or come under is financial.
Yeah.
And often it is not enough.
And yeah.
Yeah, the children, they grow up, you realize the expenses increases, which I didn't realize. you think that's easy, but it's just that next, how can I do it? And it's.
Yeah, it's never ending. As I've learned as being basically an entrepreneur the past 3.5 years, it's really fun, but it's also, you're grinding. You're like, and the margins are slim, especially when you have two little kids.
Yeah.
And you live in the New York City area. I took this weekend off, and it was the first weekend in 2024 that I didn't work. I took one call and I did two yacht villa posts. And other than that, I took it off, which was just felt wonderful. luckily I like my job, so it doesn't feel like work sometimes, but man, it's a freaking grind.
And this is around it off, Kevin. So I've got an idea of your profession, how you progressed as a husband, communicating with your wife. How are you as a dad?
I'm the voice of Esquire magazine dad, so I should be pretty good. Being a dad is so much goddamn fun. If I knew how much I love being a dad, I would have had kids earlier. I was traveling around the world and writing about boats and doing a lot of other cool shit, so I didn't really want kids. I guess I had my son when I was 38, but I didn't live the normal life that a lot of my friends had, where they were working an office job, started having kids at 30, and now the kids are in high school or whatever. I was flying to Sydney, Australia at the drop of a hat. I was spearfishing in the Bahamas for a story. I was hanging out with celebrities and profiling. It was just like kind of a weird existence, a really fun existence, but kids didn't fit into it. And then my son and my daughter came along, and man, I just love it. You need to come up with a really good reason to get me out of my house.
Okay.
I really enjoy hanging out with my kids. They're awesome. As a dad, I think I'm pretty good. It helps that I work from home. I'm lucky in that regard. I'm here. Patience, I think, is probably, like for a lot of dads, the hardest thing I deal with, because I'm very point A to point B. I'm very direct with a lot of my stuff, and I have high expectations, as I said, for myself. And sometimes you try to have these high expectations. You forget their kids, right? And you expect them to behave a certain way, and they don't. And they have just no concept of what you're talking about, or why they should be getting, why their shoes aren't on or whatever. And then it's an issue with me just going through my mantras and trying to keep calm. And sometimes I'm better at it than others. So I'll tell you. But you have kids?
Yeah, three. Yeah, they're much older. So I'm at the other end whereby three girls. My oldest is 23, to what, twin girls at 18. So different challenges.
Yeah. No, sometimes I lose my shit, but for the most part, I think I'm pretty good dad.
From you saying that it takes a lot for you to leave your house, have to be a good reason, that just tells me that you love being at home. You enjoy being with your family.
Yeah, I do. And that's new. I used to go out all the time. I used to be in the bars. I was out. Really liked that as well. But these days, who am I going to have a better conversation with? My daughter. Like, love talking to her about. And then my son is like, just loves to converse. He wants to talk about animals, and he knows a lot about animals. And we can just sit there and talk about who wins a fight, a polar bear or a grizzly bear. He tells me about some weird sea creature that he knows about that I don't even know about, even though I spent my life writing about the ocean. A lot of fun. As far as my social life, I also am at a jiu-jitsu gym 4 or 5 days a week. So that kind of is my, that has replaced going to the bar, going out for
dinner with
whatever. Like, I'm around guys. I have a similar mindset. Bunch of weirdos in a jiu-jitsu gym.
So you may not be aware that it's for many countries, May's Mental Health Month, to really promote it and get that awareness out there, and also to follow up on the awareness and to really encourage men, as you said earlier, Kevin, to reach out, to speak, to take the support that's there. And if there's not the support, to try and for us men to create that support, whether it's speaking to your wife, friends, or a professional. What would be your sign-off message to people listening to this today? Not necessarily today, but in the future.
Be kind to yourself. Be kind to other people. And if you feel like you need help, there's absolutely no shame in getting it.
Okay. I'm going to come to no shame in a moment. Why did you choose be kind? Very important. Why did you choose be kind?
I think it's one of the most important parts of life. It's one of the most important things I'm teaching my kids as well. I think kindness and persistence and a sense of humor are the three most important things a human being can have. Life's hard enough, dude. Everybody I know, we're all going to lose every single thing that we love, right? I love my kids. I love my dog. I love my wife. I love my house. I love my job. At some point in the future, I'm going to lose all those things. They go, if I go, probably me, hopefully, first, it's going to be gone. And that's going to happen to every single person on earth. So why not just be nice to people?
And finally, no shame, because I believe that's the ultimate barrier that stops us men from reaching out. The perceived shame and fear of judgment.
Yeah, shame. Yeah. You will find with shame, I think. Yeah. Some things you got to keep to yourself. But you find with shame when you start letting go of it. It releases a lot of weight on your psyche in ways that you probably don't even comprehend or there in the moment. When you just let go and you practice radical acceptance of who you are and what your life is and what reality is, you'll become so much happier. Just radical acceptance will reduce your shame and radical openness with people as well.
Kevin, it really has been a pleasure. I know it's a normal script you say at the end of an interview or a show, but really, as I love your candor approach, your transparency as well, and most of all, the fact that you're unashamedly a family man, the way you appear to be vulnerable with your wife. You love spending time with your children. You said it takes a lot for you to, there's a good reason for you to leave that home, and creating that purpose within yourself. And that's hard. And it's just trying to find in some, as you said, whether it's within the work industry, or if you can't find it in work, find it with outside, but find something to cling on to. And the powerful words that you said at the end, and you're right, it's a sobering message, but it's an important one, whereby everything we love, we will lose one day. And during that journey, let's just be kind to one another and reach out. And if we can just together help remove that barrier of shame, because once we remove that barrier of shame, there comes freedom and a joy that we probably never knew existed in life. So yeah, good.
Life's too short to be depressed. You got to figure it out. You can't wallow in it. You got to do something.
And I wish you all the best in your career, and your entrepreneur 3 years in. And I'm sure there's bigger and greater things ahead for you. And hopefully I'll have you back on the show in the near future.
Yeah, thank you. Let me just say, give myself a plug. Follow me on Instagram at the Yacht Fella. I write about the stuff we just talked about. And I write about boats as well. You know, hopefully you guys find it helpful for you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. See you.
Great. All right, Gary. Thanks so much for having me on. This was a blast.
No, more than welcome, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yes, sir. Take care.
All right. Appreciate it, Kevin. Bye-bye.